Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and this is our 100th episode of Book Hype. Can you guys believe that? And by the way, I'm joined by Karen and Brittany. Hey, ladies.
Hi.
Hello. So our 100th episode, it's kind of crazy.
I feel old.
I know. It feels like, I didn't expect us to get to 100 episodes, so.
I feel very young because I've only been on for such a short time.
True. But that's okay. We love you anyway. All right. So for this very crazy special episode, we are going to talk about like all of our favorite things in books. So we have a really long list, and it'll be kind of amusing because I saw some really funny things that some of the ladies wrote down. But first, as always, we are going to start off with what we've been reading. So go ahead, Karen. Tell us what you've been reading.
Okay, I only got through one book this week, but it was a really, really, really good book. It's called Inherit the Stars by Tessa Elwood, and it's basically like a space opera, and it's science fiction, and it's about this girl who, in order to save her sister's life, swaps out with her other sister to get married to this guy in a completely different planet so that their families can form an alliance. And turns out that the romance aspect of it isn't a huge part of it, but it's really well done and it was really, really nice. And there are a lot of nonverbal moments that you have to read very closely to understand the significance of, which is I really like when authors are subtle and it's not like in your face about it, but it's a little bit about politics, it's a little bit about romance, it's a little bit like science fiction, we have to jump in the ship and, you know, fly across space sort of thing. And all these elements came together in just this beautifully written book where people smile and sunshine and feathers, and the way that she uses the words to describe what's happening to give you these like feelings about how these people are reacting to things that aren't just like, yeah, she smiled. No, you know, her smile was light and it was bright and all this kind of thing. It was really good. I cannot recommend it enough.
Excellent. And Brittany, have you read anything this week?
I have not, but I downloaded like 800 things this morning, actually. I finally broke out all the Christmas gift cards and I logged them in and I downloaded a ton of books for my commute in the next 2 weeks. So after I finally finished the final of my Sherlock adaptations this week, even though I said I technically read them last week, I was finishing them. But I finished them this week, so I will have more when we return.
Excellent. All right. For me, I read two books this week. I read The Dark Days Club by Alison Goodman. Alison Goodman was the author of Eon and Iona. If you guys know about those, they had dragons and stuff, and then they're super cool. This is definitely different from that series. However, it is set in the 1800s, which you guys know is a little bit of a favorite of mine. And not only that, but it's where like these demons have kind of infiltrated all the layers of society. And the main character, Helen, she's a lady, so she's meant to be, you know, appropriate in society and stuff. So she has to choose if she's going to save the world or save her reputation. And back in the 1800s, really saving your reputation was the only thing that mattered. So it's this really fun, cool book set in the 1800s. It's a YA book. She meets this lord who is on the up and up and he knows exactly what's going on. But he's kind of like has a very bad reputation, even though he's a lord. And so she really shouldn't be around him. And yet, in order to save the world, she needs to be with him. So it's kind of this madcap adventure trying to save the world from demons set in 1800s England society, which is vicious in and of itself. So I liked it a lot. It's kind of definitely one of my books that I would love. And then the other book I read is called Sweet Little Lies, and it's by Jill Shalvis. You guys probably heard me talk about her a ton. It's an adult romance novel, and it's her new series that comes out in June, and it's the Heartbreak Ridge or Heartbreaker series. I forget what it's called. Sorry. But I love this new series. It's set in San Francisco, and it's different from the other things that she's done. And it's about a young group of people who live kind of in this kind of hip, trendy area in an apartment building in San Francisco, and it's all about their friendships and, of course, romances. And so we meet this large group of friends who's clearly this series will be focused on them. And so I really loved it. Like I said, it's different from her other novels, which have like quirky small towns. So it's fun to be in a city and to see what she'll do with these characters and stuff. So I really like that book as well. And that comes out in June. So be on the lookout for that. So those are the two books that I read this week. Very fun, very fun. All right. So just as a reminder, before we get into our crazy episode, our January book of the month is going to be Passenger by Alexandra Bracken. And exciting news for Alexandra, Passenger was number one on the New York Times bestselling list this week. So after its first week out, it hit the number one spot on the New York Times bestselling list. And I'm super, super excited for her. I think it's awesome. And Passenger is a great book. So definitely pick that up for our book club episode, which will be next week. Our February book for Karen's enjoyment is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies by Jane Austen and Seth Graham Smith. It's also in celebration of the movie adaptation coming out in February as well, just in time for Valentine's Day. How romantic, zombies. And our March book is The Shadow Queen by C.J. Redwine. And this is a little bit of a kind of fairy tale retelling with a lot of cool twists and stuff. So that's definitely something to look forward to. And The Shadow Queen comes out in February, but it will be our March book, so everyone will have time to get a copy and read it, which will be super fun. All right, now let's get on with it. So we decided for our 100th episode, we'd do something kind of fun and different. And we basically put a huge list of things together, and we all picked different things that go on the list. And we're just going to talk about them. And of course, if you guys have anything interesting that you want to share with us, to add to our list, of course, you can always tweet us at BookHype. We love reading your tweets. Some of them are super funny. All right. So the first thing we decided to talk about, and this was totally Karen's pick, and I enjoyed it even more when I started Googling, is weird book and author facts. So Karen, did you realize when you suggested this that there were some truly like unusual things out there that we didn't know about books?
No, I was actually, that's kind of why I suggested it, because I don't really know a lot of really weird book facts, and I was like, this will be interesting to learn about and also to share with our listeners.
Yeah, there is some really, some interesting things, like Ray Bradbury, who is the author of Fahrenheit 451, was a descendant of one of the Salem witches. Bradbury was descended from Mary Perkins Bradbury, who was sentenced to be hanged in 1692, but managed to escape before her execution could take place. I like her. Brittany, I think you should take the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. If I can scroll up in time to find the next one. Oh, duh. Sherlock Holmes has been portrayed in film and television more than any human character in literature, which is astounding, and every single adaptation so far that I've seen has been brilliant. So keep it going.
Yeah.
I don't care how many people create Sherlock Holmes in that free domain range. Just give me more. I love it.
See, I wonder if that has more to do with it than anything else, that it's been because it's free domain and you can do so much with Sherlock Holmes as a character, if that has something to do with it. I don't know.
I love it. I love that it's free domain, because I think it's just, there is so much you can do. Like, how many crime scenes in the present can you set him in? How many in the past? It's just, the possibilities are endless.
Exactly.
Gender bending, everything. It's brilliant.
And I think the fact that there have been so many adaptations, and I mean, I suppose some people are bored with it, but I'm not bored with it either. I think that's just really a testament to the like character's personality at its core. Even when they change some parts of him, or, you know, into a her or something like that, I think the fact that it's still interesting after all this time is amazing.
Excellent. All right, so the next one is Gulliver's Travels described the size and orbit speed of the moons circling Mars 100 years before astronomers. I mean, is that luck? I mean, how does that work?
This stuff fascinates me because you always hear about, like, science fiction turning into science fact, and people who wrote science fiction, you know, back in the 60s were totally making this stuff up. And yet today, a lot of the things they described exist and are part of our daily lives. And I think that's so cool to be a writer and to think, you know, I'm going to write this and maybe someday it'll actually be a real thing that I can hold in my hands.
I know. I love it. It's very cool. Okay. This one is really interesting and could reflect on a lot of different things. So Pride and Prejudice was originally entitled First Impressions. I'm sorry. It just doesn't have the same ring. It would not have worked for me. What do you guys think?
I feel like it would have mainly based on if she like beefed up her first impression of Darcy within that novel. I would have been like, yes, absolutely, I'm into it.
I know, but like, it's just not like you say Pride and Prejudice and like everyone's like on board, like first impressions. Like you could be talking about first impressions about anything. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily like signify a book. And let's face it, first impressions in zombies just does not have the same ring.
That is a true story. But think about it. If it had been called First Impressions and this fact was flipped, you'd be like, oh, you know, I don't know. Pride and Prejudice doesn't even just have that same ring to it.
That would have made sense.
I know. I just don't see it. All right, Karen, you want to read the last one? Because you're the word girl here. You like
thank
words.
Thank you. William Shakespeare is the first person to record the words amazement, bedroom, advertising, blanket, bump, gloomy, puking, gossip, drugged, champion, accused, and addiction. I think there might be more. I think I read something about...
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Yeah, like assassination. He was the first one to use assassination, I think, or something. I've read some of these before, but it's incredible to go back and look at all these really common words like bedroom. And he was the first person to put them down.
Yeah, if you think about all the things that he wrote and all the scenarios and things that he set up within his stories, and if you look at novels today and how so simply they reflect all the different things that William Shakespeare did. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not simply just words that he uses. It's phrases and it's description and it's storylines and basic character traits. So many things stem from Shakespeare. Do you know what I mean? Like, almost most stories have some basis in the work that he did. So I always find that really fascinating as well. Let's move on to our all-time favorite books / authors. All right. So, Karen, I'll give anyone $10 if they can guess yours because, well.
You're going to lose a lot of money.
To guess any of
I know.
Karen's
well,
books.
I don't know. I think no there's one on likes. There. I think there's one on there that might throw them off.
That's true.
So go ahead and give us yours.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I'm not quiet about the things that I really like. So some of these answers are going to be super obvious. So like, yes, I love J.K. Rowling and T.A. Barron and Rick Riordan, of course. I do really like Melissa Marr. I don't talk about her too much. I haven't read everything she's written, but I really liked the Wicked Lovely series and Made for You, and I want to pick up some of her past books, and I'm going to be reading her next one coming out, which I think is Seven Black Diamonds?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about that because she's going to return to fairies, and that's cool. And I don't know, she was just sort of like one of the first authors that made a fantasy element like fairies, which I hadn't read a lot about before, incredibly real to me. And this whole kind of mythology just bloomed right before my eyes that I hadn't been aware of. And that was just really fun. But another one that I don't talk about enough is the book A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson, which I read in college and was one of the few books that I absolutely fell in love with during college. And I haven't seen the movie yet, but I want to because that book means a lot to me.
Awesome. And Brittany, how about you?
Okay. I mean, J.K. Rowling as well, because, you know, she's the queen, but also, you know, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I'm a huge, huge, huge Sherlock Holmes fan, so much so that I think no matter what the adaptation is, as much as I love Elementary to death, nothing does it quite like the books. I love every single mystery and story in there. I think you get a better sense of Watson in the book. I just love it so much. Donna Tartt is freaking incredible. The Secret History remains my favorite book of all time that I've ever read in the history of reading anything. I absolutely love it. I love her. I love the Goldfinch. Everything that she's written, I absolutely love. I love Harper Lee. I love To Kill a Mockingbird. I really liked, I did like, you know, the her latest book this year. I'm sorry for anyone who didn't like it and, you know, got offended by the manuscript. Judy Blume, read everything she's ever written. She's incredible. Just one of those, like, childhood staples that you can't get over, along with Sharon Kretsch. She literally wrote my childhood. I love Sharon Kretsch so much. Her, like, I just reread and reread and reread her books. Walk Two Moons was one of my favorite books when I was a kid. Maureen Johnson is killing it in the literature game. I will read anything she writes, including strange fan fiction about Hank Green and John Green and Benedict Cumberbatch in a submarine for a charity, which remains to this day one of my favorite things I've ever read by her. Also, the Founding Fathers' tweets to each other. Incredible. It is like when Paul Revere's like tweeting and he writes like, the British are coming, please retweet. She wrote this thing. It is incredible. It is so funny. She's a genius. I don't know how she does it. The Grimm brothers are, it goes back to like what everything else in the world is based on. They top everything. They're incredible. And then, oddly enough, Melissa De La Cruz, this woman wrote a lot of things that other people like, like, you know, like Witches of East End and like The Descendants. But I love her for the Au Pair series, which was one of my favorite like teenage guilty pleasure reads. It's like about, it's like five books and it's like hot and crazy summer. And it's like these girls who just decide to work in the Hamptons for the summer and babysit these children of really rich children. And it is one of the most incredible beach reads you will ever read in your entire life. So Melissa De La Cruz gets a shout out from me because her books just stick out in my mind so much.
That's awesome. I've not ever read the Au Pair series.
Oh my God, you have to. It is so good.
All right. Well, that will be something I will now have to check out because you've like given it a big old stamp of approval. No, I'm just kidding.
Thanks, Brittany.
I will check it out. One more thing.
All right, guys. It's just also
and
incredible.
Now I know what the listeners
like. There's romance. There's everything. It's so good.
Oh, see, and the listeners are always like, now I have to put more things in my to be read pile. I'm like, now I know how you feel.
The Au Pair series is a must read.
Oh boy. Okay. All right. So for some of my favorite books / authors, I love the novel April and Oliver by Tess Callahan. It came out ages and ages ago, but I love it. It's dark and twisty and the characters are really kind of broken. And part of me really wants it to be a movie because I think it would be like this fantastic little indie film kind of thing, but I don't know. No one's ever picked it up, so we'll see. My other favorites are the Lady Julia Grey series by Deanna Raeburn. And really anything she writes, she's phenomenal and sassy and witty. And her female characters are not bashful in any way. And I love that about her characters. Sarah McLean, who writes historic romance. Sarah Reese Brennan, who writes YA. She's written some truly phenomenal things. The very first book I ever read by her was The Demon's Lexicon, and it's part of an entire series. It's the first book, and to this day, no book has surprised me quite as much as that one did, because it was so, there's a plot twist that is so obviously in front of us, and yet you never see it coming, and it's the beauty of that book that you don't see it until she has to tell you, and it's just so phenomenal. And then Brightly Woven by Alexandra Bracken. I talked about this book last week and I couldn't remember the title of it. And so I finally went and found it. It's called Brightly Woven. I love this book. It's beautiful. Definitely something to check out. And anything by Stephanie Perkins, I really love her writing. But Anna and the French Kiss, I think, is still my favorite Stephanie Perkins book ever. So those are kind of all my favorites. And I know that there's more, and I always like forget until you really like stare hard at your bookshelf or think about things that you, when you know, when you were younger and you read. And so, but those are my for nows, the ones that came to my mind the second I thought of this question. So good stuff. All right, let's talk about some favorite book quotes. And I think it's so, I'm looking at what each of us wrote down, and I think it's fascinating at how drastically different we took this, this challenge to find our favorite book quotes. Because Karen's, yours are fantastic. Yours come from some very interesting things. So I'm going to, like, I was looking at them, I'm like, what? It was totally not what I expected. So you go ahead and do yours first, because yeah, I love this. Because
I'm weird. Actually, funny story. I went to my Facebook page, my about page, where I have a list of quotes that I liked that I've sort of collected over the years. So this was very easy for me because I just went there and picked a couple out. And some others I Googled and everything, but it was fun reading through these quotes that I like put on forever ago. Like there's one from Twilight on there. And it was the lion and fell in love with the lamb quote, because apparently that was definitely my jam, like, in high school. So, hey, whatever. It's still a good line. But I want to start off with this line that made me cry in House of Hades by Rick Riordan, which is when Bob says, "Tell the sun and stars hello for me." And then later, Percy says, "Bob says hello to the sky." And that's my favorite book that Rick Riordan has ever written. And this line made me cry like you don't even know. It's embarrassing, but it's really beautiful and I like it a lot. But then that's when things get weird, because after this I have George Catlin from Letter and Notes on the Manners, Customs, and Conditions of the North American Indians. Wrote, "O insatiable man, is thy avarice such? Wouldst thou tear the skin from the back of the last animal of this noble race, and rob thy fellow man of his meat, and for it give him poison?" And he's talking about, like, the American bison, like buffalo, and trading, having the Native Americans trade buffalo meat and hides and everything for alcohol, and basically turning them all into a bunch of drunks. And I remember reading this in college and just being like really affected by it and thinking that it was very profound. And then definitely one of my all-time favorite quotes is from George Orwell in Animal Farm. And he says, "Man is the only creature that consumes without producing. He does not give milk. He does not lay eggs. He is too weak to pull the plow. He cannot run fast enough to catch rabbits. Yet he is lord of all animals. He sets them to work. He gives back to them the bare minimum that will prevent them from starving, and the rest he keeps for himself. Remove man from the scene, and the root cause of hunger and overwork is abolished forever." And this is just, like, blew my mind when I read it, and I was like, man, that is so true. And it makes me think a lot about, like, how we treat animals and how we just take from nature, which is a huge theme in T.A. Barron's books, which I think is why I love his book so much, because he's very, like, pro-nature, and humans should probably, you know, not do all of the things they're doing. And so that's a quote that kind of has stuck with me over the years. And then lastly, I have a couple from A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson. And the first one's just hilarious because he goes, "What on earth would I do if four bears came into my camp? Why, I would die, of course. Literally shit myself lifeless." And I guess I should have explained before for anybody who doesn't know, but A Walk in the Woods is about this guy, Bill Bryson, who takes the Appalachian Trail as far as he can possibly go, just because it's sort of like this midlife crisis thing for him, and he doesn't really have any experience or training or anything, and it was really difficult for him, and this is one of the points where he's just like, this is a terrible idea, and I might actually die doing this. But then it makes it even better when later on he says, I wanted to quit and to do this forever, sleep in a bed and in a tent, see what was over the next hill and never see a hill again. All of this at once, every moment, on the trail or off. And that's just a really good look at, like, even when you love something, you can hate it. Or even when you hate doing something, it's also important to you. And it doesn't have to be one or the other. But I think it's important always to find a balance. And A Walk in the Woods is just a really hilarious story, but it also has a lot of great life lessons, especially about nature, too, which seems to be a theme for me. But just sort of like doing something that you're uncomfortable with, and even if you fail, kind of being proud of yourself anyway.
That's awesome. Is the adaptation of that the one with Robert Redford in it?
Yes. And okay, I'm like terrified of seeing it, but also like really excited because I think they're going to do a good job, but I think they're going to change some things, which may not be a huge deal, but.
Yes. No, it took me a second to realize when you said it was a movie. I was like, what? And then I thought about it. I'm like, oh, it's the Robert Redford movie. Got it. Okay. So here are some of mine. And mine are not nearly as profound as Karen's, so be prepared, people. The first one is from The Daughter of Smoke and Bone by Lainey Taylor, which is just a gorgeously written book. Lainey Taylor just has a way with words. But here's this one. Hope can be a powerful force. Maybe there's no actual magic in it, but when you know what you hope for most and hold it like a light within you, you can make things happen, almost like magic. And then one from Anna and the French Kiss. It's just a snarky little line that Anna says at one point. Girl Scouts didn't teach me what to do with emotionally unstable drunk boys. And then the last one is from This Song Will Save Your Life by Layla Sales. And I love Layla Sales. She's incredibly smart and witty, and her writing is very fun. So this is a line from This Song Will Save Your Life. Sometimes people think they know you. They know a few facts about you, and they piece you together in a way that makes sense to them. And if you don't know yourself very well, you might even believe that they are right. So, I don't know. I like those a lot. I thought they were different and had a lot of meaning to them on some level. Not like Karen's, whose are way deeper, but to some extent. All right, so Brittany, tell us about yours.
Okay, so no secret, my first one comes from Donna Tartt from The Secret History, and it's, some things are too terrible to grasp at once. Other things, naked, sputtering, indelible in their horror, are too terrible to really grasp ever at all. It is only later, in solitude, in memory, that the realization dawns, when the ashes are cold, when the mourners have departed, when one looks around and finds oneself quiet to one's surprise in an entirely different world. I don't know why I have that quote highlighted in my book, but I did when I read it first, and I just love it so much. I read this book like senior year of high school. It was one of our books for, I took a like critical analysis of the contemporary novel in its highfalutin title course, which is really like, we read like The Secret Life of Bees and The Secret History and a bunch of stuff, but like it had such a pretentious title that that's the reason why I took it. Yeah, but this, I don't know why, it wasn't for any notice in class or anything, but I've had it in my mind for a long time. And then my second quote is less significant, and it's a J.K. Rowling quote, and it's, "Not my daughter, you bitch," which is one of my all-time favorite lines in literature ever written, because it was so powerful in the moment of reading that final book, you know, that it was just like, it was so, like, it caused such an effect, like it just like, you know, it made you like get really, really excited as a reader, which a lot of things like when they're coming to their end either do or don't. But that was one of those lines that just like, you know, changed the world. Another one is from also J.K. Rowling, from The Order of the Phoenix. And it's from Dumbledore. And I don't know why I like it so much, but it's like, you do care, said Dumbledore. He had not flinched or made a single move to stop Harry demolishing his office. His expression was calm, almost detached. You care so much, you feel as though you will bleed to death with the pain of it. And The Order of the Phoenix is one of those books where everything changed for Harry Potter, it was where everything kind of took a darker turn towards the end. And this quote was just so, so encompassing of all of that. And it was just, it is so good. It's one of my favorite things. This last one that I have, I am going to assume that it's like in the History Boys play, which is also written down somewhere. Even though it's from a movie that I remember it from a movie, not so much anything else. Yeah, it's really a stretch, but it's about literature and it's my favorite. I have it written down. I have it, you know, pinned to my wall, like my actual physical wall, not my Facebook wall. I have it pinned to a physical wall, like, you know, pre-Facebook, it's pinned to a physical wall, written down. And it's the best moments in reading are when you come across something, a thought, a feeling, a way of looking at things, which you had thought special and particular to you. Now here it is, set down by someone else, a person you have never met, someone even who is long dead. And it is as if a hand has come out and taken yours. It is without a doubt my favorite quote of all time, of any other quote in the history of the universe. But it's about reading and about books, and I just wanted to share it with Book Hype.
No, I like that. I like that a lot, actually. And I think we've all done that. We've come across something and been like, oh my. So I think that perfectly describes books. I like it. All right. This next category is kind of different and unusual. And I realize we all put, again, very, very different things. Mine is quite possibly the weirdest. And I'll try to explain myself, but I'm not really sure. So this is books we wish were written but haven't been yet. All right, I'll go first and just get my embarrassment over with. So as you guys know, I was recently studying for my BCBA exam. So while I was studying, in order to keep my brain focused on my studying, I know this is going to sound super weird, I listen to a lot of music while I study. It kind of helps me stay focused on what I'm studying. Again, I know that's weird. My brain just needs a lot of input, I guess. So I listened. Conveniently, the new Adele album came out like a week and a half before I had to like hardcore study to sit for my exam. So literally, it's all I listened to was Adele. Not that I wouldn't have anyway, because Adele. But I loved certain songs on her albums. And for some reason, I want them to be a story. Like in my mind, they make up one story. And it's when We Were Young. If you guys don't know the one, it's the next single, I think, that started to play on the radio. Hello, and then Water Under the Bridge. And then there's also this other song from an artist called Cam, and it's Burning House. And I want all of those songs combined to tell a story. Like, if you listen to the lyrics, I won't sound nearly as crazy as I do right now, I promise. Or maybe I will. It's okay. It happens.
No. I feel you.
Does that happen sometimes where you guys like hear a song and all of a sudden you've constructed an entire story, or is that just me?
It's not even so much that I hear a song. I'll literally be listening to a movie soundtrack where it's literally just instrumentals, and I'll be like, I could tell a completely different story with this.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm not crazy. Yes.
So I don't even need lyrics to create a whole...
Yeah, lyrics make it a little easier to construct a whole plot in my head. But, you know, I'm good with that.
Actually, okay, funny story. I was in this writing class in college, and we had to come up with a short story. I don't even remember the parameters, but I decided to write a short story based on the track listing of Eminem's Relapse album. So,
of course you did, and now I'm going to need to read this.
No. But I don't think that's this weird, because I actually did write a story based on an album, so there you go.
Okay, good, because I was like writing it and I'm like, oh god, that sounds, and then I looked at what you guys wrote and I'm like, oh man. Now I just seem really weird. But no
judgment.
I could outline you the entire story that goes with those songs from start to finish. I know how it begins, middles, and ends. Anyway, but someone else can write it for me, please, because that's just not my thing. All right, Karen, what about you? Much more normal choices.
Hey, no judgment here. I am really into gender bent things right now. I think that's really interesting. And I was talking to one of my friends, and just, you know, we were talking about how there's beginning to be more books based around gay characters, but they're usually male-male, and there's not a whole lot of lesbian romance stories going on right now, which is a shame. But then I got to thinking how cool it would be to either gender bend or create like a gay or lesbian fairy tale. Not create one, but like take Cinderella and there's like a princess and she meets a girl and kind of change the story and make it that.
There's because, a Snow White one out there.
You know, I was going to ask because I'm sure like
there is this. One.
Yeah.
There's definitely it's the Huntress Cinderella. It's Cinderella, I think.
I was wondering,
I'll make you a list.
Yeah, it's so hard to know everything that's ever written, obviously, because there's a lot of stuff out there that, like, even we aren't aware of, even though we're, like, really tapped into a lot of the big books that are coming out right now. But I'm sure, like, there's something out there for these sort of things. But I definitely think there should be more, especially, like, the fact that fairy tales are so instrumental in our childhoods, and to have kids grow up with a story where, you know, this girl meets a princess and they fall in love. Like, I mean, that would just be astounding for that to be somebody's fairy tale that they remember from their childhood and fell in love with. I just think that's so cool. And then my second choice would be A Marauder's Book from J.K. Rowling. And I mean, I'm kind of lying here because I think I'd rather it be a movie, but anything else from J.K. Rowling, really. But I think Marauders would be really interesting. And I've been delving back into Harry Potter a bit recently, given Alan Rickman's untimely death and rewatching the movies and stuff like that. So I just thought, man, this would be really cool. We need this.
Yeah, and that story is, it's Ash and the Huntress, and they're by Melinda Lowe.
Oh.
And they're basically Cinderella.
I think I may have heard of this before.
Yes, they came out a while ago, but there's definitely those, and I know that there's more, so I will find them for you and let you guys know. All right, so Brittany, what about you? I sense a theme here for you.
Well, because I'm really in the zone right now, and I have been for the past, like, 2 years. Every single, like, you know, anti-hero I come across that I relate to the most has been a Sherlock Holmes inspired character. In fact, I just watched, well, I recommended to my mother that she watched The Imitation Game today. And it's because, like, you know, it's the misunderstood lead. So I want a Sherlock Holmes, you know, incredible genius who's misunderstood, like, you know, that type of lead written by me. That's all I want in the world that doesn't exist yet. I just need the great idea. But I love Karen's suggestion for a Marauder's Book because I want that so badly. And I didn't know I wanted it until see, like, you know, how you don't know, like, it's just one of those things that can exist, but you don't want it to exist because it's so good. What you come up with in your head, it's just, but J.K. Rowling could do no wrong by me. So
let her put pen to paper. That's why I think I want it to be a movie, because the movie's going to mean less to me. If she made a book, like, that's going to mean a lot to me. And what if I hate it? Like, yeah. I'd be terrified. So I'm like, movie's fine. Movie's fine. Yeah. She can write the screenplay. That still counts, right?
Movie's fine. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And I would take the screenplay. I'd read it first, maybe, if it was available.
I love how you guys break it down. You're like, it would mean less, so I'd be okay with this, but, you know, this could be really touchy, and I don't know, and I love it. Love it. But definitely the Marauder's Book. When you think about that group of characters and what they could have been like in high school, please, thank you. Oh, it'd be amazing. And then with the,
plus,
you know,
I just want to know what that, like, training is like, you know what I mean? That whole world, it's a whole different animal to tackle.
I know, I kind of love it. The world before the really bad, when things were different. Oh, I would love to see that. All right, moving on, because then we're going to get stuck in that fairy tale forever and sit here and write it all ourselves and talk about all the things we want.
I know, the rest of the show. I was like, what about a McGonagall origin story? I would read that.
Yeah, you know what? Actually,
we're going to scrap the entire episode
and just talk about this.
maybe before Fantastic Beasts, we will have.
Yeah, that would be good.
We could definitely pencil that in. And by pencil, I mean somebody typed that so we don't forget it. all right. So now we're going to talk about something way more frivolous and fun. And that is best book boyfriends. Because, you know, there's always one that you like, right? Brittany, we're going to let you start this time.
Okay, good. Because a lot of, like, well, Karen has one of mine, obviously. But I feel like I was so caught off guard by all these topics. But I think that, honestly, either Will Grayson from Will Grayson would be fine by me, just because I loved those characters so much that I just wanted to keep spending time with them. I mean, one of them was gay. That's fine. It's whatever. But, you know, I just feel like the other one, I guess, would be the obvious best boyfriend for me, personally, choice. But both of them would be great boyfriends.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just a boyfriend for you. It can be a boyfriend of several.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, you know, selfishly when this topic came up, because my second choice was Augustus from The Fault in Our Stars, because he, like, you know, he had, like, you know, cancer and he was going to die. And he was like, I'll go to Amsterdam with you and use my wish. Like, he's just so nice and kind and considerate. So I really liked him, but I really like Karen's choices as well. So,
oh, yeah. All right. Well, Karen, go ahead and.
I feel bad. I'll give you
one. No, no, no. You guys can share, you know, they are fictional. It's okay.
Okay. This just went to a place. Okay. So my first choice is Rafe from The Shameless Hour, because he's the best ever. He's like super, maybe not super religious, but like he definitely grew up religious and he has like this code of conduct and he doesn't just sleep around. And when we first meet him, he's a virgin, even though he's in college. And he's just, he is like a good guy, capital G, capital G. And I really appreciate that. You don't see that a whole lot in books because, let's be real, the bad boy is sometimes sexier. But Rafe is just, he's a really good character. And I really liked him. Percy Jackson is an excellent boyfriend. And I think he should be my boyfriend. No, I don't. That's kind of weird. But he is really good, and he's sweet and kind and brave, and that's all you can really ask for, and funny. And then Peeta from The Hunger Games, which a couple years ago I would have been like, Gale, but I'm definitely Team Peeta now, and he is a good guy also. I think there's like a theme here for me, so I think I just figured out my type.
And then super funny. Until this last one, which is absolutely my favorite person in the entire world who does not exist.
Yeah, Levi from Fangirl. Yeah. Do you want to say something, Brittany?
I just love him so much. He's a perfect human being that does not exist. Thank you, Rainbow Rowell, for Levi.
Very nice, Karen. So you like the good boy is basically what you're saying.
Apparently. I mean, I don't mind a bad boy once in a while, but I think this is definitely like my usual go-to.
Yeah.
Can you think of a bad boy?
Probably go without saying that I love. Well, I feel like I should say it goes without ever, like, I don't have to say anything that it goes without saying. Like, you know, like, I love every single Sherlock Holmes male adaptation put into literature.
True. I get it. All right, so mine are different. One of mine also, Brittany, was gay. Because when I first thought about this, I was thinking, like, the boyfriends that were in the books and they were so wonderful. So mine is Riker from Understatement of the Year by Serena Bowen. So Kristen should feel very proud of herself because Karen and I have each now picked one from a series that she made us read. So thumbs up, Kristen. And then the other one that I really love is Nicholas Brisbane from the Lady Julia Gray series. And he is kind of a man out of place in a sense. Like, he has some nobility about him, but he is really just a common man who investigates mysteries and murders, and he tries to live by a code and be, you know, a certain way. And then Julia is always like pushing him in, you know, his buttons and pushing him into places he doesn't know where to go or what to do with those things, because she's definitely not a lady of her time either, which is really fun. So I really, really enjoy him as a male character. And as a book boyfriend, I'd be okay with him. I'd be good with that. And then what I didn't put down, and I just kind of really thought about it as you guys were talking, is Roth from one of Jennifer Armentrout's books. He is your certifiable bad boy. I mean, legit, he's kind of a demon, but in a good way. He's maybe the prince of hell, but whatever, it's fine.
Small details.
But no.
Yeah, no big deal.
But he's got a heart of gold, okay? A demon with a heart of gold. Just go with it.
That's the important part.
It is. And I really, really enjoyed him. I enjoy a lot of the male characters that Jennifer L. Armentrout writes, because most of them are bad boys, like so obvious bad boys. But there's always some little thing with them that makes them kind of a flawed bad boy. They aren't strictly bad. There's always something that is there that kind of reveals itself as you get further into the novels and you learn more about the characters, which is what I enjoy, because really a strictly bad boy is just asking for trouble. I like it when they're, you know, the upfront is bad because that's what they have to portray to make it work, but there's always something more there. I like the depth of character sometimes that comes with that. So yeah, I think those are mine. All right, going from boyfriends to best ultimate book couples. So I'm going to let you go first, Brittany, because I think your list is quite interesting.
Yeah, and I just came up with like two more because I was like, oh my God, this is the next topic, and it's fine. Okay, I got this. So my first one that I listed was Augustus and Hazel, because I thought that they were a fantastic couple. I love their dynamic, even though one of them, like both of them thought they were dying, and then, you know, it was brilliantly written, and it dealt with like love and loss and teenage age, and it made me cry, and I love, you know, blah blah blah, it's been written before. Every single one of Steph Perkins' couples, I know Jen you have one, but just every single book that Steph Perkins writes, she can write a couple like no one else. It's incredible. And my next one is all of Rainbow Rowell's couples, like, you know, Eleanor and Park and Kath and Levi are my top in that group. But since I just finished reading, you know, Every Breath, which is like, you know, a Sherlock Holmes spinoff by Ellie Marney, I love Rachel Watts and James Mycroft so much. I think they're fantastic. I'm halfway through her second book, and this couple is just like, it's so, you didn't think it was going to happen, and I didn't want it to happen until it happened. So it's one of those type of couples.
It first happens, you're like, I like it.
The moment, like the accidental moment it first happens, you're like, oh no, I didn't know how badly I wanted this to happen. And then when it happens for real, it's very satisfying. But then I was thinking, my favorite couple of all time, which kind of fits into almost all of these molds and, like, you know, story-wise, is Elizabeth Bennet and Darcy. You know, like, it's the, you hate each other, you kind of like, it's that push-pull, and that I think is just what I always have in the back of my mind when I'm reading things. And it didn't occur to me until the best female characters, when I looked down and I saw my choice, and I was like, which is kind of a spoiler alert for what we're gonna do next, but, you know, like, I was like, oh right, that is the couple that I like kind of have in my mind every time I read anything. So I like them as well.
Nice. All right. So some of mine, as Brittany pointed out, I do have a Stephanie Perkins couple. I do love all their couples, but I really loved Isla and Josh. There was something about them that just worked, and it was different than the other stories being told, and I really enjoyed it. And then Julia Gray and Nicholas Brisbane, obviously. And then Kat and Damon from the Lux series, which is J.L. Armentrout. And then Riker and Graham from The Understatement of the Year, which is Serena Bowen's novel that I read twice because I couldn't help myself. It was that good. Yep, Kristen should be super proud because I read that, like, yeah. Anyway, Karen, how about you?
Percy and Annabeth, of course. They're like my OTP because they're perfect for each other. And Emily and Oz from Nowhere But Here, which kind of jumped out at me at the last second, but I was like, oh yeah, I really liked them, didn't I? Eleanor and Park, I think that's a really interesting relationship, and the way that was written was just really great. And then my LOL one is Blitz and Hearth from Magnus Chase, because I still ship them even after all this time.
I love it. Can I tell you, now that you said Nowhere But Here, which is a Katie McGarry novel, I really loved Noah and Echo from.
Pushing the Limits?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. That one. It's so good. And they're fantastic. I love them. Anyway, moving along before I come up with like 10 more, which is bound to happen at this point. All right, moving on to best female characters, because let's face it, the world of YA is pretty much filled with lovely ladies. So let's see. Karen, you can go first this time because you just had to go last.
Oh, thank you. Sam from Magnus Chase. She does so much. She does, her homework, and she's a good granddaughter, and yet she's also like this Valkyrie, and she tries to save the whole world, and she's, daughter of Loki, and like things are tough for her, but she just gets through, and she's just so strong. Annabeth from Percy Jackson, because she's brilliant, but she's also a great fighter, and I love that balance. And Hermione, of course, my childhood hero, my adult life hero. I would like to become Hermione Granger. But also Ginny, because, like, Book Ginny, because Book Ginny kicks some ass. And I always forget how much I appreciate her until I go back and reread it. I'm like, man, she's so badass. I really like her. And then Asa from Inherit the Stars, which is the book that I just finished reading this past week. And the reason why I like her so much is because she is very, very innocent and naive. And some people, I read some reviews of the books from other people, and they thought she was really stupid and annoying. And I didn't see it that way at all, because her best quality is the fact that she's very, very genuine. Like, she lives in this world where politics are paramount, and you have to, like, every step you take has to be calculated so it looks a certain way. And she doesn't do that. She's like her, the guy that she ended up getting married to has this huge scar on his face, and his family covers it up because they don't want anybody to know that he's, ugly or whatever. And she's like, no, you can't do that, because then people won't know everything that you've been through and how strong you are. And she's so naive, but it's like her best quality, and I love it so much about her.
Awesome. All right, Brittany, how about you?
So mine are also Hermione from Harry Potter. She's seriously the first person I think of when I think of, like, best female character in anything ever created. And then my second, which inspired my other recent tangent, was Lizzie Bennet, because I love characters who are like, they are not accepting of the roles that they're supposed to be fed into. Like, Hermione's supposed to be the smart best friend, but she's like, no, I'm not going to just be the smart best friend. Like, I'm going to be the person you need to go to, and you're going to recognize that. And Lizzie Bennet's like, no, I'm not going to just be that person who is expected to marry off rich and, like, be treated a certain way. And I think I respond well to those type of characters. So those are the two strongest that I've thought of when, thinking about this category.
Yes, I like them. They're both very good quality. Some of mine are more contemporary. They're from, more current books. I like Mori from Locke and Mori. She is basically, it's the female version of Moriarty, and it's when she and Sherlock were actually friends, and kind of depicts all the things that go wrong between them in their friendship. So I love her, because she's definitely not necessarily a hero. But I love the things that go on with her. Karou from Daughter of Smoke and Bone, if you guys have read that series, Karou is just a fascinating character and a really rich kind of fantasy novel, which is great. And then Blue from The Raven Cycle, which is Maggie Stiefvater's series of books, and I'm desperately waiting for the fourth novel to come out. And again, she's this really cool character that has to kind of deal with a lot of different things on her plate, and she has to be strong, and yet at the same time she has some weaknesses, and there's a lot of things that go on with her. So they're complex female characters, and I think that that's what I like about them. They're not just one thing. There are lots of different layers to them, and they can be strong and weak at the same time, and there are lots of things that go on in their lives that kind of affect who they are and who they will become. So I really enjoy them as female characters. Now let's go from best female characters to best book villains. This one was really hard. Like, it took me a long, like, this is gonna sound weird, but like, I couldn't really think of book villains. Did you guys have a hard time, or was this super easy for you?
No, it was so hard.
It was a really strange thing, and I'm like, book villains, these are awesome. And then I'm like, I can't tell you any because I can't think of any. It was really weird.
Same problem.
So I'm not gonna lie. I need to think. I totally took a cheap way out and I just went with Voldemort because hello, book villain. And I think that for me, one of the reading those books, you read about this character who doesn't technically exist really. You know, he's not supposed to be alive, and yet you're not allowed to speak his name. That's how terrifying he is. That's how much damage he did to a community and a society of people, is that you can't even speak his name. So I guess for me, that's why he's such a bad, like, bad villain. He's a bad, bad man. Anyway, Karen, what did you pick?
I mean, honestly, my first choice is always going to be Voldemort, too, because I completely agree with you. Like, he is sort of the epitome of the bad guy for me. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that he created those Horcruxes. He was willing to give up his soul in order to achieve the things that he wanted to achieve. And somebody who goes to that length, you know, while it is sort of like, it's magic and stuff, like you said, those sort of things don't really exist. He doesn't, that type of person doesn't really exist. But the fact that his dedication to what he wanted to achieve was that great is absolutely terrifying. And I mean, part of it is probably because, you know, you grow up reading about him and he kind of becomes that pinnacle of the bad guy for you. But he's a great villain, but in like the worst possible way. Because you already took him, I decided to actually go with the Red Queen from Queen of the Tierling, because she is this really scary person who is also very sensual, and you know, she's a woman, and I think female villains are, there's not a whole lot of them. And so it was great seeing one of those. And I just think also her dedication to her own ambitions is so incredibly great that she's willing to go to these extreme lengths makes it terrifying to read about her, because you don't know how far she's willing to go.
And now that you just said that, I was thinking of, was it the commander from An Ember in the Ashes? She was also pretty terrible, considering that one of the people was her son and how horribly she treated him. So yeah, she was pretty bad too. All right, Brittany, give us yours.
My number one pick was also from Harry Potter, but Voldemort was not the first person who came to mind. It was Dolores Umbridge, because she was the first literary character in my like memory where I had the Order of the Phoenix in my hand, and I read the line where she clears her throat and it's just written like MHMH, and I threw the book across the room when she finally walked in again for like the fifth time. I was so furious with her appearance. It was like, I cannot imagine another character that I hate as much as Dolores Umbridge. So she is my number one villain.
I just want to say that I agree with you on that, because I hate Dolores more than I hate Voldemort. Like, no question.
Yeah.
I think it's the fact that she's...
Like, Voldemort, I feel kind of sorry for.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of, like, crappy things happen to him. Like, I'm not going to feel that bad for him, because he made his choices and he became this hugely evil person. But Dolores is so human still. Like, she doesn't necessarily have that excuse of being soulless. And... I don't even want to talk about it. She just makes me so angry. I hate her so much too.
She makes me so angry. And she made me angry before she was put into like, you know, human form. Like, I just vividly remember closing the book and throwing it across my bed the day it came out. I was like, I cannot deal with this woman anymore. And I was so angry with her. And then I think, you know, Moriarty in The Final Problem, which is the story that, you know, again, sensing a theme with me, this has been my life the past 3 years, in case anyone cares.
you know, it's when Moriarty shows up at the Reichenbach Falls and, like, you know, they have their final duel. I just think that in that moment, I related to Sherlock the most. It was like, it just makes sense to punch this guy and go over the cliff with him because he's so awful. Like, he's written so well in the text that you kind of side with Sherlock Holmes in that moment, where it's like, the only way to end this horror is to, like, throw myself off a cliff with him. So yeah, I think Moriarty is also a really well-written villain.
I like it. I like those choices a lot. All right, let's talk about favorite classic books. Shockingly, Brittany has Conan Doyle down. I'm just saying. Let's get that one right.
It's not in all caps or anything.
No, not at all. Like, it's not highlighted and, like, yeah. So two of my favorite classics are, and these are probably going to seem really weird, Wuthering Heights and Mansfield Park. When I was in high school, I had to read Wuthering Heights for AP English. And we read a lot of books, like we read Dracula and the Canterbury Tales and all kinds of things. But I really loved Wuthering Heights, and I think it's because the people are so wretched. And I know that sounds really strange, but a lot of times you read novels and everyone gets their happily ever after and everything works out, or there's always some really great theme, or, you know, that's what you're reading for. But really, in Wuthering Heights, you're reading because the people are awful and they're terrible and they're horrible to each other because they're selfish and they didn't get what they wanted up front. So they just continue to torment each other. And it's supposedly in the name of love. And I really love the setting on the moors too. I think that's a really, it's a really cool kind of creepy place to set a book, but at the same time, like, they just pull it off perfectly. So I don't know. I really loved Wuthering Heights. And then Mansfield Park, which is, again, it's a Jane Austen novel, and I don't know, I like it. I love the story of it. I think it's different from her other stories. So, I don't know. I really like Mansfield Park as well. And Karen, why don't you go ahead?
I mean, no shock to anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while. My favorite classic book is Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. It's one of the few very old classics that actually made me feel something other than hatred, because sometimes they're just really hard for me to read, and like Moby Dick, I would rather jump off a cliff than read that again. I'm not even exaggerating. But I also have loved for a really long time 1984 by George Orwell, and I'm wondering now, this just occurred to me, if this is where my love of, like, dystopian novels has come from, because I read this in high school and was absolutely fascinated by the entire concept, especially the concept of, it's been so long since I've read it, but you know how, like, they put the words together and make new words, and they're slowly, like, trying, basically getting rid of all language and just putting them together and making everything a lot more concentrated. I just found that completely interesting. And the whole book, when I was reading it, was a little difficult for me to understand, but I was so fascinated by the characters that I flew through it anyway. And yeah, that's definitely a good one for me.
Awesome. All right, Brittany, what else besides Sherlock Holmes do you love?
My favorite book in high school was A Tale of Two Cities. It was one where, like, it was, I think it was because it was one of the first books that I actually, like, dove into the history of, like, trying to, like, you know, make sense of what was going on as to, like, what events inspired Charles Dickens to write this story, like, and all that stuff. And it was my first, like, really huge research paper that I, like, put a lot of work into. And so I think it was one of those books that kind of kicked off me doing that for a lot of other books and television shows that I've, you know, gotten into in my life, where I'm like, oh, I want to know everything and everything about this. And it just so happened that it was A Tale of Two Cities at the time. The second book is such a weird choice. It is such an obscure book, but I read it in like, you know, in American Lit 1, which, like, we were literally the first 2 weeks of class reading Gravestones. That's how far back we went. And this book is called The Wide, Wide World by Susan Warren. And there are about 30 pages where a young girl is trying to decide what type of paper she wants to buy to put in her writing desk at home. And at the time, I just remember complaining about this book, being like, this is the stupidest book. This girl literally spends 150 pages running back and forth to the same shop trying to figure out what desk and what writing paper she wants. And it's the stupidest thing. And we had to write about, like, you know, all like the curtains and stuff that she was trying to figure out. But like, as the further I got removed from it, the more I wanted to reread this book that I sold instantly back to the bookshop, because I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever read. And it's fascinating. Like, it is just such a good look into like that time period. It's like the 1850s. It is so good. And then Conan Doyle, obviously, I think he's incredible. I will stop talking about him, I swear, after this. And then Northanger Abbey is one of my, it is my favorite Jane Austen book. It's so gothic and dark and so unlike anything else that she wrote in her life. It's just one of my favorite things. It's as close to like a ghost type story as she got, and it's incredible.
All right, all excellent choices. Now we're going to talk a little bit about book tropes, our favorite and least favorite. All right, so Karen, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Favorite trope is, I have a couple of them. One is friends to lovers in romance novels. And I don't know, it's just nice when people like finally see each other for the first time and they're like, oh, there you are. And I know some people really dislike this, but it's always been really nice for me. And then the other one is in like mysteries or like horror books. And it's the whole like hidden plain sight, the killers among us thing. So think like Scream, where, you know, you've met the killer before, but you never realized it was the killer until the end. I love those kind of books because I love it when I'm totally blindsided by something, because it's hard to do. We read so much, we see so much, those plot lines have been done so much, and when somebody can trick you that thoroughly, it's such a cool feeling. Then you want to go back and reread it to see if you can like pick up on the clues.
I have to say, Karen, as soon as I saw you wrote that one, I was like, yes, that! I hadn't even like thought of that. Like I was trying to like go through them and I'm like, and then I was like, oh no, that one is I love not like having everything so obvious and yet not. And you're like, so when you get to the point where it's revealed, you're like, but I should have known that. And then you kind of go back and you can find the clues. I love a good solid mystery like that. I'm definitely down with that.
And full disclosure, Kristen helped me with that one, but I still stand by it. She's the genius.
But I'm sticking to it. Bonus points for Kristen. This first one people are probably going to groan at me for. But I'm going to preface it with a well-constructed love triangle, or even a love square, where you have like four different characters playing into it. And the reason I like this so much is if it's done right, if it's done well, I think it really works and it adds a level of tension to the story. Examples of this is Cassandra Clare's Clockwork Princess series, or the Clockwork series, has a really interesting kind of triangle in it. And it's not ever clear how she's going to make a decision. And it's not, and I love that. I think it really works within the book. Not all love triangles are good. I'm fully willing to admit that. Some of them are downright terrible. But when they're really well constructed and they add layers to the story and how the story unfolds, I think that those are really good. Or like I said, if there's four people involved and it gets really complicated, I love a good love complication. What can I say? And then I really like kind of like the anti-hero or the unreliable narrator, because again, it adds a different dimension to the story that you're not necessarily expecting. You want to hate the character, but at the same time, there's some redeeming quality about them that keeps pulling you in. And so I really like those. I'm not really so sure if that's a trope or not, but it's what I like to read about. And Brittany, how about you?
Mine is where you think that, like, you know, one half of whatever dynamic is just like not interested. Like there is zero chance for a romantic like love affair to ever happen. And then all of a sudden it does, which I think comes from, again, in a Sherlock Holmes type thing. Like, you know, like, where like, he's just so, like, obscenely oblivious. Like, not even, like, smart and, like, interested in something else. Just, like, completely oblivious. And then it, like, I love something that happens in the last, like, 40 or 30 pages of a book. Like, I want it built up until, like, literally the last possible second, and then I never want to touch it again. Like, I don't, like, I'm not a huge fan of, like, relationships that continue through series. So I like that, like, where they finally figure it out and, like, with 30 pages left, and then that's the end of it. Or if they can make this, like, drag out for, like, 6 books, can you imagine? I would be all over that.
Oh, no!
I don't need the payoff. I just need the torture.
I don't want the
Because
payoff.
Really, it's
I just
torturous
want,
watching that.
It, yeah.
I love it. I love it. I would just love it for, like, 6 books and the last 30 pages of one book. It's just, it's the end. But it's so not, like, mushy or anything. Oh, my God. I would love it so much.
I don't
much.
Know. I think I need a little more payoff than that. Like, that's painful. I don't know if
no,
I can.
No, I would love it because then. And I'd be like, well, that's it. They're just so happy because I know that they can make it work because they made it work for 6 books.
Wow. Okay. That's.
Yeah, I'm a tortured. I love being like.
You love a good tortured soul. Tortured okay. Soul. Yeah. I got it. All right. So Brittany likes to torture people. It's fine. and then let's talk a little bit about our least favorite tropes. And Brittany, you go ahead.
Okay. So my least favorite thing, which is like almost, I would say 95% of the books that I pick up are, it's like the girl who is the least approachable person. She's the loner. She's the bookworm. She's like, yes, I relate to that girl enough, but I also, every book I pick up, I don't want her to be the person that this hot, insanely like hot guy is choosing. It's one of my least favorite things. Like, I want at least for half of it, like, you know, like the guy to be the outsider, or, you know, just some sort of role reversal. So it's always like when it's always the girl, and I'm picking up book after book of the girl who just, like, you know, the popular guy decides to find interesting. Like, I just get bored after a while. So that's kind of become in the last few years my least favorite thing that I've been reading.
All right. No, I can absolutely get that. All right. Karen?
Least favorite trope, definitely miscommunication. I hate it so much because it's overdone, first of all, but also it has such a simple solution that if people just talk to each other, then everything would have been figured out just fine. And I'm the type of person that likes to know things up front. I like to be completely honest. I hate people who lie, and I dislike people who hide the truth from me. I just want to know, like, being lied to is 1,000 times worse to me than knowing, like, brutal honesty. So this just really bugs me. But also, there are so many other ways to create conflict that are way more interesting and have a bigger payoff than, oh, you know, if you would have told this person this at the beginning of the book, then literally none of this would have gone wrong. And so that's why I hate a lot of, like, Christmas vacation movies and stuff, you know, like, they're built on that sort of thing, and it drives me crazy.
All right, I get it. So some of mine are insta-love, because let's face it, there can be insta-attraction, but the whole insta-love thing makes me want to pull my hair out, because, I don't know, it bothers me to no end. And then the girl who's absolutely perfect. There's nothing wrong with her. Everyone loves her, and her world is just so wonderful. So, like, the ultimate Mary Sue. And then as you guys were talking, I realized that there was one more that I didn't really care for. And that's the, you think your life is so normal and perfect, and then all of a sudden, you're this magical, powerful creature out of the blue. Like, you had absolutely no idea. I think, and we see that a lot, let's face it. We see that an awful lot in a lot of the novels that are written these days. So I think it's all about how that part of the story is told. It depends on how much I like or dislike it.
I was going to say, yeah, and like Harry Potter.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Karen. Yeah, not only Harry Potter, but I feel like everything that's starting to be adapted into television series or movies, you have to readjust yourself again, being like, right, I have to re-accept that every single person that I'm seeing is going to be like, my life is so normal. Oh, wait, I have to do X, Y, and Z now. You know, like, it's just because you read these things so many years ago and like you were like, okay, whatever. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh, right, I have to reaccept everything again. That it's becoming, I agree with you, it's becoming like one of my least favorite things because I'm having to like reaccept it in a different genre.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Karen, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, like, Harry Potter, does that bother you in that? Or is it because that happened, like...
No, that, I think it's different, though. Like, it's not as, like... Like, I'm thinking of more of the YA novels where... And mostly it's girls, where all of a sudden, you know, she's this boring bookworm girl, and then all of a sudden she's super cool and special, and the whole world rests its feet on her shoulders, and... Do you know what I mean? Like, it's big and sweeping, and it's not... Like, Harry Potter was a little bit different because there was such a process involved in him being a wizard. It wasn't just, boom, here you're magical and powerful, and go save the world. Do you know what I mean? There was a buildup. There were mistakes to be made. He was just a child. These are more like teenage, almost grown-ups, and then all of a sudden, on your 18th birthday, you inherit magical powers. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I think, more what I'm thinking of. It's not, I don't know... Sometimes they're written more annoyingly than others. Yeah. Sometimes it's very like really, you had no idea you were different, like zero. Like there was no tipping off when you could like see things or hear things that no one else could. No? Okay. Like it's just one of those things, like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all depends
on the author.
Yeah, it happens so often, like you were saying, in books and movies and television shows that I can see how it would get old pretty quickly. That absolutely does not bother me because I'm still waiting for that to happen to me, so I'm cool with it.
Karen's like, I'm still waiting for my letter from Hogwarts.
Yeah,
fine.
Duh.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it's bound to happen any day now.
My owl just got lost. It's okay.
I have Ron's owl who has dementia at this point.
That's right. Just, you know, it's fine. It's fine. All right, so let's talk about our favorite places to read, because we read a lot. So what is it that you guys love to have, or like a place to have when you read? What is your favorite place? Brittany, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. My favorite place to read is on a long trip, whether that's in the car or listening to an audiobook if I'm driving. Because I had a really great experience with The Martian this year. And I think I said this a couple of times on this podcast, but that was like my first audiobook since I checked out Harry Potter from the library on audiobook for a while. And it was incredible listening to that. I wish that I hit more traffic because I just loved listening to it so much. But I also like to be on vacation and reading because, like, you know, if everybody's at the beach, or like, you know, it's just one of those places where you're not at home. And like, is where I live, I'm lucky enough where I can go to the beach any given weekend, but it's those places where it's like there's nothing to get back to. So I like being on vacation and reading a lot. I remember going on trips to like Jamaica when I was younger, and I brought 3 Harry Potter books even though I had read them all. It was just, you know, it's one of those things where like there's nothing to get back to. So I like having places to read where I don't have to get back to. I know that's like not really like an everyday reading thing, but that's my like favorite place to read where it's not, where I have absolutely zero obligations.
Makes sense. I like it. This way you can like read uninterrupted and just like you have no prior commitments, which is awesome. I love it. All right, Karen, how about you?
I'm not checking my phone. I'm not worried about missing anything, you know, that sort of thing.
I will admit that I have not found that sweet spot yet where it's like the most comfortable place to sit and read, because I feel like wherever I go, like something hurts or I get uncomfortable or like my arm goes numb. But I will say that I read most often in my bed, just stretched out on my stomach. It's just the most comfortable for me, and I like being under all the blankets and just being toasty warm. And then I can like toss my book to the side and fall asleep instantly, which I have trouble doing unless I'm reading. So it helps.
Nice. All right. So for me, it's in a big squishy chair under blankets in the winter. Like I did mine by seasons. I'm not going to lie. In the winter under like in a big squishy chair or in my bed too. I do like to read in bed, like under lots of blankets and being nice and warm and snuggly. And then in the summer, outside by the pool or at the beach is kind of where I like to read. You know, get some sunshine while you're reading. It's very good for you that way. And then what are some must-haves when sitting down to read? For me, I like to have a tasty beverage. I'm not going to lie. So in the winter, that could be like hot chocolate, tea, coffee, sometimes a glass of wine if it's in the evening. And then in the summer, like lemonade, iced tea, or something frosty that we've mixed up in the blender that's maybe not quite so childlike.
or wine, let's be real.
Yeah. No. Well, no, more like a margarita probably in the summer. Yeah. Something a little more that deserves an umbrella in it. Let's say that. How about you, Karen? What do you need?
Just warm blanket. I like being nice and comfy, cozy, and all wrapped up.
Nice. Okay, and Brittany, you?
Mine's like not so tangible, but it's the least possible chance of being interrupted. So I read on my commute a lot, and just like in my room, like late at night, you know, when everybody else is asleep, or like, you know, so just like having, I put in my headphones when I get on the bus, even though I'm not listening to anything, it's just like no one can interrupt me. It's just I have those like 55 minutes to just read the book. So that's all I want, is just like creating that environment of where I'm the least, it's like I will not be interrupted while I'm reading. I hate being shaken out of being read unless I'm falling asleep, which is fine. That's acceptable.
I like it. All right. Now, this next one, it's our last one, actually. Woo, we made it through all of them. So this next one, I'm having trouble coming up with one. So we'll have to see if I can think of one by the time you guys go. I know, it's weird, right? Because I'm like, oh, this is a great one. And then I'm like,
I was so excited. Like I told you when you proposed this one, I was like, I am so excited, because it's honestly, this has been weighing on my mind. Well, my first one has been weighing on my mind forever. Like I don't know why I feel bad about it, but I do.
All right. So this is our biggest book confessions. All right. So Brittany, you go ahead. Give it to us.
Okay. So I don't know why, like I just said, I don't know why I feel bad about it, but I've not read the book Middlesex. And I feel like it's one of those books that like I should have read, but I just haven't.
I don't know what this is.
Yeah, it's a book, like it's black, it has a black and white cover, it has a boat on it, like I'm sure it's about a boat. I honestly couldn't even tell you what it's about, but like every single person I talk to, even people who have not read anything in their lives, have read Middlesex in at least like my immediate group of friends, and I'm like, I don't know what that is about, or I cannot hold down a conversation about that. So yeah, that's like my biggest, like weirdest, like book regret, but my, like, you know, my favorite confession is that Snape is my favorite character in the history of me reading anything. You cannot say a bad thing about Snape in my presence. I think he's the best character in, and anything I've ever read, Snape has been my favorite character. So, sorry world, but I am a huge Snape supporter. And let me tell you, when Alan Rickman died, I'm still having a hard time. So, it's been a rough week.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said this, actually, Brittany, because I've been seeing so much hate for Snape lately, and I never felt that way reading the books. Like, I thought his story was so complicated and tragic. And yeah, he did some bad things, but he spent the rest of his life trying to make up for that. And even though he was still a dick, like, he did the right things. And when people are like, he is literally the worst person to ever walk the face of the planet, I'm like, have you read anything about Voldemort? Because I'm pretty sure he's worse. Or like,
or Dumbledore. Like, Dumbledore wasn't a...
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm with you with that. I mean, I wouldn't say he's my favorite character in the history of ever, but I really like him. And sometimes I feel ashamed for liking him. And I don't want to, because I really do.
Yeah, that's why it's like my big confession, is because like I keep quiet about it a lot, but I have a couple of like little like Snape pins and stuff. Aww. That I don't wear out. It's like, you know, it's just I kind of like poured Snape like fan art and stuff that I don't like ever put it out there. I love him so much. The only person who really knows is my mom, because like I own Snape's wand. And like I own a lot of like Snape stuff.
She's well, now like, everybody knows. It's all good.
Yeah. Now everybody. I put it out in the universe for book hype. Just so you guys.
This is amazing. I never knew that. I never even would have guessed. But we need to talk about this more because I have feelings.
Absolutely. The only person I've ever really talked about it with is Natalie, to be honest, because she saw a tweet I tweeted once out of the blue, and she was just like, "Excuse me, we need to talk."
And that is still very Natalie.
Yes.
All right, Karen, give us yours.
All right, look, this is not a secret. I've talked about this endlessly. I know. It's something that I cannot help, guys. I literally cannot help it. It
Karen
just
needs a support group.
It's honestly my favorite thing about you.
True.
It's okay. So sometimes I like terrible movies more than I like good books. That's how I phrased it, because that's the most accurate way to describe it. I.e., I freaking love the Golden Compass movie, and I've read the books and I didn't really get them. Like, they were really difficult for me to understand. I read them in college, so I wasn't a child. Like, they're just hard for me to understand. And I liked the movie way better than I liked the book. And speaking of Natalie, has threatened to not be my friend any longer. She says that they don't even talk about the Golden Compass movie in their household. That's how much they hate it and how much it destroyed the book. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's totally a thing. I also really love Aragorn, the movie. And I mean, I like the book. The book's fine, but I loved the movie and series of unfortunate events. Love the movie, hate the book. I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. But they were just, I mean, I read them like a few years ago, the first four, I think, and I couldn't get into them because I think I was just way too old for them, which I usually don't say, but they were just too juvenile for me. But I really liked the movie that I'm sure not everybody loved. So yeah, nothing new really, but the extent goes down deep into my soul and I can't get rid of it.
Did you like the Percy Jackson movies more than you like the Percy books?
Oh, no, but that's because I like the books, like, more than life itself, so...
I just wanted to check. I wanted to be really clear on that fact.
Yeah. I do love the movies, though. I think the movies are really fun, and I know a lot of people don't like them, but I definitely like the books more than those.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear. Okay, so I've had a little time to think about this some more, and I'm trying to think about the best way to phrase it, I guess. With this whole sweep of dystopian novels, I don't know if I've ever really made it a secret that I really don't like dystopian novels. I, like, have zero need or desire to read them because they're depressing. And so for a while, like, with The Hunger Games and with Divergent and all the really, really big dystopian novels, I basically read the first novels and then I kind of skimmed all the rest of them because I didn't really care.
Oh,
so there you go.
Yes. Okay, so I knew that about you, yeah. But I don't think I knew the extent.
You know, I really don't like them. Like, they're good, they're well written, I get it, but I don't need to read the depressing stuff. I don't know, it's really weird. I just don't have a desire to read those. Some of the ones I've read, like, I read, like, the whole Darkest Mind series, because that was different for me. But, like, the other stuff, I didn't really care for.
That's why I'm here, because I love dystopian.
That's right. Karen gets all my dystopian novels. Like, no joke, sent a book. I think I just sent you a box of, like, 8, by the way. There's
yes.
There's a box coming your way.
Yes.
So, like, but seriously, I'm just like, why do I need to read depressing things? I can just turn on the TV and watch the news. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, I mean, I guess...
Like, I read enough of them, and I skim enough of them to be knowledgeable and to talk about them. But I'm not like, oh my god, the next one's coming out, yay! I'm like, oh goody, now I have to read that.
Yeah. And I guess one of my confessions, too, sort of in the same vein, is like, I haven't read a lot of classics. Like, I don't know if I've ever read a Jane Austen book, to be perfectly honest. I definitely haven't read Pride and Prejudice. And
oh boy.
I know this is going to be a really weird experience.
I think you have to read it before you read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Should I or should I not?
Absolutely.
Well, here's the thing.
I don't know.
Because Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies literally takes verbatim Pride and Prejudice and inserts the zombie parts.
And I think that's literally the only reason why it was readable for me. But it might not be for Karen.
I know.
Oh, I don't know now.
It's hard. It's a hard one.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen the Pride and Prejudice movies, which are not like a stellar example of exactly what Pride and Prejudice should be.
No, but some of the scenes are taken like literally verbatim. For
right. I'm just thinking, as long as she has the base knowledge of it, then she should be okay.
Have you seen the BBC like Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice?
Guys, the only Pride and Prejudice thing I've ever seen in my entire life was the Lizzie Bennet Diaries.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, what?
This is a way bigger concession,
like, not even like Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice?
Like, seriously?
No.
Karen.
Oh my, Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice, like, 6-part BBC miniseries is the best thing ever created, hands down.
Okay, so.
Like, holy cow.
Like, you now have a new homework assignment.
Confession just whole just in like, book
it just blew up right now. So your homework assignment is you need to watch some version, preferably the BBC, but if you gotta go Keira Knightley, whatever.
I think Kristen owns that one.
Confrontation scene.
Thank God.
Thank God for Kristen. What would we do without her? Why isn't she a regular host? Why doesn't she just take my position?
Hey, we're good. No. Let's not get crazy.
No. But also, maybe.
Okay, you blew my mind now. Now I feel like we need
to. I'm so sorry. I didn't. Wow, okay. Well, at least
you saw the movies.
The Keira Knightley version. Like, I was hoping for at least the Keira Knightley version.
Yeah, minimum.
Like, best case scenario, you didn't read the book, but you saw the Colin Firth version. I would have settled for Keira Knightley, but Lizzie Bennet Diaries is like 3 steps below what I was saying.
That's, I liked Lizzie Bennet Diaries.
It's great. It's great. It's
great, but fantastic. It's kind of like fan fiction.
Yeah, it's not what we're looking for here.
No.
Like, you get like 45 seconds of Keira Knightley spinning on a tire swing, at least, in the Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice. But, like, Colin Firth as Darcy is just life-changing.
Yeah.
The letter scene? Oh, my God, Karen.
Yeah. All right. So
good.
So, Karen.
Oh, I'm going to watch. Well, I have
now,
like,
now we have to watch it just so we can like revisit it.
Okay.
You've talked about it so much.
Honest question now. Do you think I should go into Pride and Prejudice and Zombies without having read anything or knowing anything, really?
I feel like
that would be really interesting.
It would be.
But I feel like it would ruin Pride and Prejudice for you, totally.
Yeah, it might ruin Pride and Prejudice, which at this point doesn't really matter. But because she's gone this far without...
I know. I don't know how you go that far without Pride and Prejudice, quite frankly. You grew up in a literary world, Karen. Like, it's not... I'm called you Catherine because that's my sister's name. I feel like I've had this conversation really with her recently as well. It's fine. But, like... Like, how do you live in such a literary world and never have experienced any Jane Austen?
I struggle with that.
You would love Lizzie Bennet so much.
You really would.
She's like the hero. Like, but honestly, okay, so Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is very close. So I think because Karen likes zombies so much, I think that she should go into it without having Pride and Prejudice or seeing Pride and Prejudice at all. All
right. She'll be our test case.
Just because she likes zombies. If it was me going into it, the only reason that it got me hooked was because of the Pride and Prejudice. I don't like zombies at all.
Right.
So it was the classic that got me into it. So I think Karen will be okay with that. But I would highly recommend then binging like the 8-hour Colin Firth run.
And it's Colin Firth. It's totally worth it.
But
it really is.
Then I have to admit for the rest of my life that I've read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies before I read Pride and Prejudice. Do I want that on my shoulders?
That's on you.
That's
on you.
That you have not seen any adaptation of Pride and Prejudice.
Have you
or read it right now?
Any adaptation of any Jane Austen like Emma or Mansfield Park.
Emma. Oh my God, Emma. Let's not even get there because Emma.
I saw the web series of that too.
No, doesn't count. Web series are off limits. They do not count.
Okay, no. That does not star Johnny Lee Miller as the most adorable human being ever to exist.
That would be Mansfield Park. It's my favorite for a reason.
No. And Emma. He did an Emma.
Is he? No, he's not an Emma.
Yes, he is. You go on Hulu and you watch Emma. Johnny Lee Miller is freaking in that.
Emma. That's the BBC Emma. I was thinking of the movie Emma. Okay, yes. No, BBC Emma. Score. Yes, you're correct.
Yes.
He's in the BBC Emma. It took me a second. I was like, no. He's in Mansfield Park.
Yeah, yeah, no.
You're right. He was in both because, well, he's Johnny Lee Miller.
Mansfield Park, which is like, Mansfield Park, which is like Jane Austen fan fiction of Jane Austen, but Jane Austen also writing fiction of her own work. Exactly. Incredible.
I love it.
Incredible.
Oh my
anyway. God. Sorry.
Okay, so dear listeners, should I read Pride and Prejudice before I read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
Jane Austen.
Should I document my foray down into the Jane Austen world?
I'm just so baffled by this, especially that it came up now as opposed to like when, you know, Jen and I were talking all about Jane Austen up in here earlier.
You had this
confessional part. It was the confessional part and that just sort of did her in. I didn't
like, either. I talked about Northanger Abbey. We talked about Mansfield Park. Like we talked about a lot. Like Lindsay Bennett was my favorite female character.
Right. And if Laura would have been here, we'd have been talking about Persuasion. Like, oh, Karen. I feel like I'm going to come visit you on my spring break and bring all of my Jane Austen movies, and we're just going to sit and have a watch and get you through.
I own the Colin Firth BBC version. I'll just show up at your house one day in North Carolina. Like, hey,
Brittany,
I'm here.
It's time. And we're going to go, little road trip, go visit Karen where it's warmer than it is here in New England and New York, and just watch some Jane Austen. I think it would be good.
I mean, if it gets you guys to my house, then one day, yes.
Karen's like, well, let me plan this accordingly. Oh, my goodness. All right. So after the devastating news that Karen has never really interacted with anything Jane Austen, which totally just blows my mind, I think that pretty much wraps up our episode. I think we have to end on that note because I got nothing else. So, listeners, you guys get to vote. Does Karen read or watch Pride and Prejudice before Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies? Or does she just go straight into Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies? We're going to let you decide. So definitely tweet at her and let her know.
Oh, God.
Because I don't know what to do with her.
I'm going to get a lot of messages.
I can't wait. All right. So until next time, where we will be doing our book review of Passenger by Alexandra Bracken. I'm Jen.
I'm-